As we conclude the 11th chapter of Hebrews, if we're not careful, we'll be saying, sure has been a long chapter, and we've talked about faith for a number of services. And we might even sigh a little bit of a relief and say, we'd be glad to get on to something else. But if we do that, we'll make a bad mistake. And the reason for it is that without faith, it's impossible to please God. Everything else can be in place, but if we don't have faith, then we're not going to serve God, because it's by faith, or on the basis of our faith, that we offer our service to God. So it's like having an automobile and saying, you know, we really like it, and it's a really workable piece of machinery, but we just simply can't put up with stopping every once in a while and putting gasoline in it, so we just sit here and admire it as a mechanical wonder. And that's sort of the way people are, who can look at the Bible and say, I believe every word of it, and read it and reread it and look at it and maybe even love it. But if you don't have faith, you're not going to be pleasing to God, because you won't do the things that must be done. And, you know, after we get through with this faith chapter, it's almost tempting to go to the book of James and say, let's look at James, because he tells us that faith without works is dead. And what he's saying is, it's just the idea of having faith, which means we believe God, and not doing anything is a real serious contradiction. You know, you say, I have faith, which really means I believe God. But then we don't commit ourselves to do the things that the Bible teaches us to do. That kind of faith is what James termed a dead faith. And we can have a dead faith, there's no question about that. Or a faith that doesn't have works in it would be a dead faith. But this is a crucial issue that we're dealing with. It's what makes the difference. It's the engine that drives the thing. So we need to make sure that we understand how faith has operated in the past, or those people who have had it have operated, and how God expects us to use it in our day. Verse 36, as I said this morning, tells us that faith is the foundation of suffering. And if we're not really careful, we'll get the idea that people who have faith always succeed. And by success, I mean according to the world. A faith person would be a person who has, you know, crossed rivers and climbed mountains and just done so many extraordinary things that it's unbelievable. Boy, those people sure had a lot of faith. And many times, people who have a lot of faith, we really don't notice their lives. But they have great faith. They rely on God's Word. They do what God's Word teaches. And because of that, they're faith people. And others, Paul writes, had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings. The word trial means an attempt on a person's life. So we should say, and others had attempts made on their lives and suffered mockings and scourgings. The word mocking here means heaping derision upon a person by sarcastically imitating them. All of us, especially when we were younger children, have had others who would say everything we said and make every expression we made and do everything we did, and it wasn't long until we were really angry and upset that people might imitate us or mock us. Well, these people mocked men of God. They mocked women of God, and did it in such a fashion as to blaspheme God. They had attempts made on their lives. They were mocked, and scourgings means that they were whipped. There were different kinds of scourges, but here, generally, it means simply to apply the whip. Moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. Bonds here simply means to have your hands tied together, and therefore fettered or tied in such a way as to be in the control of another. Imprisonment means to be in a place that is guarded. So there were people who had their hands tied together. They lost their freedom, their liberty, and they were placed under guard. Now remember, all of this occurs because they're involved in the work of God. It's not happening to them because they're murderers or thieves or insurrectionists. It's happening to them because they are men of faith. If they didn't have faith, this wouldn't have happened to them. Sometimes we make a mistake by saying that this happened to them and they had faith to endure it. If that's all we say, we haven't looked at another part of it, and that is because of their faith, they're involved in these circumstances, and by faith, they're able to endure these circumstances. We're always, I think, saying faith will get you out of trouble. I think we need to understand that faith will get you in trouble as well as getting you out of trouble. They were stoned. When I read these circumstances, I thought, first of all, that Paul's talking about New Testament characters in the sense of saying, here are the things that are going to happen to you. Look at all the things that happen to Old Testament characters. Now, these things are going to happen to you in the New Testament dispensation. And I really think Paul is using incidents in the history of Israel. It's early in the church's life. There have been some stoning. We could say this refers to Stephen, and it may. But in 2 Chronicles chapter 24, verses 20 through 22, we read of Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada, who is stoned to death because he rebuked the people. He told them, you're suffering and you're not having God's blessings because of your deceitfulness. And when he told the people this, then the king had Zechariah stoned. So in the Old Testament, there are examples of men being stoned to death. They were sawn asunder. And of all of the statements that tell us of torture and punishment and suffering, this one perhaps is the most unique, because there is no such Old Testament nor New Testament example of someone being sawn asunder. But we do have some strong evidence in Jewish history and tradition, as well as writings by Justin Martyr, that in the Old Testament days, men were sawn asunder. Now think with me. Sometimes they were sawn in two. And it's not beyond the realm of reason that the things we see in magic shows or see magicians use of placing a person in a wooden container and then sawing it in two, that's not really based upon the fact that people were literally done this way. And so the amazement of the magician's trick was that he could do it and the person would remain whole. I think that this idea goes all the way back into Old Testament or into the days before Christ, when this was done and then magicians used it to gain crowds and attention and perfected the deception of not actually harming anyone. That's the way some were sawn asunder. They were literally placed in a cassock-like device and then sawn in two this way. This probably has reference to even Isaiah, according to the Old Testament, was sawn asunder from head to foot. And they used a wooden saw. As I said, Justin Martyr and some of the other Jewish historians have recorded such incidents. So this is probably what Paul's talking about. Justin Martyr was later, but earlier men on whom he drew for his information had recorded incidents of men of God, people of God, literally being sawn in two with wooden saws. They were sawn asunder. They were tempted and were slain with a sword. That is, they were put to the test, and then after some promise of deliverance, they were then pounced upon and killed with a sword. A trick was used to get them to come out of hiding, perhaps. Some offer was made of amnesty. If you will come and let us talk together, come under, as we would say today, a white flag of truce, and we'll discuss the issue. When these people were so tested, they were fallen upon then and slain with a sword. So it speaks of a tremendous deception, and they're falling prey to it. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins. Initially, this to me seemed to indicate that they were left for the dogs to destroy. And this was a practice in the days of the Roman Empire. They would take vagrants, people that they just simply wanted to get rid of. They would smear their bodies. They'd kill a goat, or perhaps they had already slain the goat and used the carcass. And they would take blood and smear it on this person. Then they would tie a goat skin on them so that they couldn't take it off, and then take them out into the edge of the city and turn them loose. And it wouldn't be but just minutes until the wild dogs, smelling the fresh blood and the blood of this skin that they had tied to them, would attack them and kill them. Now, Christians did die that way as vagrants not long after the pagan persecution began. But this was the dress of the prophets. And it seems to indicate that this is what Paul had in mind. They were wandering about. That is, they had no home. You know, Jesus said, "Foxes of the air have nests, or birds of the air have nests, and foxes have holes, but the Son of Man hath not where to lay his head." And people talk that, well, that was poverty. It's really not emphasizing poverty. It's emphasizing the fact that Jesus Christ did not have a place that he could go at the end of the day and lie down and say, "I'm home." A fox could go into its den and say, "I'm home." Or a bird could fly to its nest and say, "I'm home." But Jesus Christ did not have a home. And this is the point that Jesus was trying to make. He gave up his home. He challenges people to give up that, and points out that he gave that up in order to be a servant of his Father. I think perhaps that these people wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins simply refers to the primitive dress that they were forced to wear, because these are qualifiers here in the next statement, being destitute. And the word destitute means to be last. Just think about it. It means to be last. Last what? Last in line. Last to receive. Destitute people are the last people that have anything done for them. And even in a capitalistic society like we have, there are people who are last in line. That is, everyone else, usually people with money, get to the things first. And the destitute people, or the people who have little or no money, are simply the ones left outside and incapable of purchasing, or incapable of getting where they want to go. So these people had no certain place to dwell. They were always last, afflicted. Has in it the idea of persecution, being pressed together, squeezed, crowded, and then tormented means they were simply treated badly. People jeered at them. People threw stones at them. They were like beasts that were unwanted. When the early Christians were in the presence of other people, they were generally just scolded and run out of their presence. In the early 1400s, there was some 23 Waldenses or Albigenses that came to England and in the area around London, and it was Christmas time, and it was cold and rainy, and they were simply excluded. Every door they went to, they were excluded from it, until finally they died from starvation and exposure. And this is the kind of thing that had happened in the Old Testament to the people of God. Because they were poor, poverty-stricken, they had no place. They wore the crudest of garments and were hunted and hounded. And Paul then inserts a parenthetical statement. He says, of whom the world was not worthy. And if we just use that word as we normally think of it, we would think of unworthy. The world was unworthy of these people. But we need to understand what it really means from the viewpoint of value, of worth, of whom the world had nothing to equal their value. Paul is saying, these people are so precious. They are of such great value. The people who have had these things done to them. And remember, they wear skins. They're so poor. They're so destitute. They're always last and everything. The world has mocked them and imitated them and scourged them and beaten them. But Paul said, there's not any person in the world system who has an equal value to these people. No one of equal value. That's what the word worthy means, of equal value. So I'm sure there were men at this time who had what we would say millions of dollars, and people who sat on thrones, people who had tremendous wealth, people who'd had every kind of talent that we might ascribe to humanity. And yet there was not a person in the world system, that is the lost world, the world outside of Christ, there was not a person there that could claim equal value to these hunted and haunted persons who wore the name of Christ. They wandered in deserts and in mountains. If you've seen the church history slides that I've shown, you see, you can understand that this became prophetic because of the Waldenses, the Albigenses, and the people in Wales. They all fled to mountainous, isolated areas. They were refugees in waste places. Some of the prophets became refugees in waste places. They lived in the mountains as vagrants because of their faith. And in dens and caves of the earth. That is, literally in caves that were made by nature, and then dens that had been dug by the hands of men. They lived in natural caves and in man-made holes in the earth. And then Paul sums up this whole thing. These all, without a single solitary exception, Abraham, Moses, David, Isaac, Samson, Barak, Jephthah, the prophets, Samuel, these all of these who we know just because of the bad things that happened to them, these all, not a single solitary exception, these all, having obtained a good report through faith. And the word report is the same word we get martyr from. It means to be well testified of, to have a good witness born in favor of a person. So all of these obtained a good witness. We might even call it a good testimony, and that would not be in any way misleading. And these all, having obtained a good testimony through faith. What do we mean, a good testimony? It means that God Himself testified to their faith and to the acts that they did and to the suffering that they endured. By this, God testifies. By this, these gain the testimony and the witness. But they receive not the promise. Now, if the promise is Christ, it would mean they weren't saved. They had received the promise in the sense of the promised one. But what is it that they had not received? They did not receive what was promised. They did not procure the promised blessing. What is that thing that they all died in faith not having received? Well, it's the same thing that Abraham died in faith not having received. And that's what they said in verse 13 of chapter 11. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off. And here it's plural, and here in the verse we're studying now it's singular. But it has to do with exactly the same thing. Abraham said that it had to do with a country, or Paul said that in Abraham's instance it had to do with a country, and it had to do with a city. Verse 16. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He hath prepared for them a city. What is it that these people died without having received, without ever seeing the city, without ever being in the city, and they didn't receive the city in life, and they didn't receive the city in death? Why? Because it's future. It is that to which the eyes of God's people have been turned since Adam and Eve. And that is a new heaven and a new earth, and a city prepared by Jesus Christ Himself. And in this new country, in this city, God shall be their God. And God shall wipe away all tears. And there'll not be any sorrow. And there'll not be any death, nor crying. All of these things are the former things, and all of them are passed away. So the eyes of the faithful are turned toward that one great promise of God, that someday there'll be a city where His people will live with Him forever. God having provided some better thing for us. Now, what He's talking about, the word provided here means to see before, to foresee, to see ahead, and then to make provision. God has foreseen something better for us. And what is that better thing for us, and really better thing for them? That they without us should not be made perfect. And you understand the word perfect means complete. It comes from teleos. And whenever you believe in the teleos theory of creation, you believe that God made it complete and perfect, and it's been going the way God wanted it to go ever since He created it, that you couldn't add anything to it. Especially when it was first created. Maybe it has some imperfections now that created by sin, but it's like a great clock and works together. And God had a plan for the Old Testament saints. God has a plan for New Testament saints. And God's plan is that they would not inherit this city without us, and we would not inherit the city without them. God said it's better that they all inherit the city at the same time and all enjoy the promise at the same time. That apart from us, they would not see God's plan completed. So the plan of God is incomplete. Doesn't mean He hasn't made plans. It means they have not yet been fulfilled. And the fact that these people would die in faith, like great patriarchs of the Old Testament died in faith. They would die in faith, not having received the promise. We will die in faith, not having received the promise, unless the Lord comes. But like Abraham, we can see another country by faith. We can see that holy city by faith. And we can die in faith, not ever having been there, but in full assurance that someday we will be there with all of God's redeemed from the ages past. And that all speaks of reunion. It all speaks of everything that we all feel so deeply about as we look at and think of loved ones. That's the promise. These all died in faith. What's Paul want these people to do? Die in faith. Don't abandon your faith. Don't turn away from your faith. Don't walk away. Don't forsake. And the word is very strong. It means to desert. Don't forsake it. And the church has to do with faith. It's by faith you go to church. It's by faith you assemble. It's by faith you give. It's by faith that you live in the world. And it's by faith you offer witness. Without faith, we won't do these things. And Paul is saying, have faith. Die in faith. And then he's going to tell us how. One man died in faith by the name of Jesus. You see, he's our example of dying in faith.